This is the Senate Labor Committee meeting in room B on February 7th, 1977.
Nothing's happened yet.
No?
Dick says you don't have anybody here.
Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Hold the house, man.
Where's the bill that we want to stop?
Okay, that's the OSCA bill and this is the house bill. That takes the state.
Who's at every test?
Where's your agenda?
Oh, I see.
Meeting will come to order. We have two bills here which we'd like to put in as committee bills. The first one would raise payment limits for hospitals, doctors and ambulance under the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund, increases motor vehicles operator license fee by 50 cents per hour, and that's at the request of the, per year, at the request of Oregon Association of Hospitals. The second bill is requested by OSCA and is relating to remove state police from unclassified service.
So moved.
So moved. Is there any objection? You've heard the motion. If not, it is so. Secondly, I would like to appoint a committee to serve on a study of Senate Bill 57 and try and get the different factions that are involved in this together. On this committee, I'm going to ask Wally Carson, and we're going to serve as a committee of one, and also working in him would be Frank Bronner, the Oregon Bankers Association, Ted Hughes, the Oregon Credit Union League, Doug Myers, U.S. National Bank, Jack Olin, Superintendent of Bank, and our own Rich Carlson, who is a committee administrator. First bill we'll hear this afternoon is Senate Bill 299. And our first witness. Let me ask you, does anybody want to sign up? Nellie, do you want to sign up on 299? Or anyone here from labor? That's a 6 cents continuation of the 6 cents employers tax. Let's see. If we don't do something on that, the 6 cents is dropped. I don't know if we have any idea for any other amount than six cents, the employees being taxed 6 cents presently, and I'm not sure. We have nothing but opponents here. So with that, we'll lead off with Carl Frederick, Associated Oregon Industries.
Save time.
I'm sorry, Roy Green. This bill, incidentally, was a recommendation of the Committee on Trade and Economic Development. However, the amount was left open.
Yes, we understand that. Carl Frederick, member of the staff of Associated Oregon Industries, and with me is Roy Green, who is chairman of AOI's Workman's Comp Committee, as well as being a major stockholder in EBI companies, as well as president of Workman's Compensation Advisors, Inc. Anything else? We would we'd like to point out, and I think Nellie has already alluded to it, there is another bill, Senate Bill 423, which deals with the same subject matter as Senate Bill 299, namely the extent of the employer's contributions to the retroactive reserve.
Just the employee's contribution?
Employers.
Employers, I
yes.
see.
Yes. Currently, the law provides that an employer will pay 6 cents per day for each day or part of a day that the worker is employed, and we refer to ORS Chapter 656-509. And this statute will be repealed July 1st of this year. Unless, of course, Senate Bill 423 passes, or you do something with Senate Bill 299, Senate Bill 423 would eliminate the repeal date. The 6 cents a day provision was inserted into the Act to help fund the retroactive reserve at a time when the current benefits had been substantially increased, and this was by the 1973 legislative session. And then, of course, this change was made during the 1974 special session, increased it from 3 cents to 6 cents. And since the increases were considerable, more money than was available from the employee contribution was necessary. And at that time, we did agree to the 6 cents per day with the further understanding and agreement that employers would only be obligated to make the payments until July 1st of 1977. And the 6 cents per day for employee amounts to about, I think, pretty close to $10 million dollars per year additional.
About 24 million.
Not 6 cents. I think it's 1.6 million per penny.
We got the revenue program from that was estimated here.
Is it 12?
Estimated for 70. Last year was 44,644,000. The combination of both.
Yeah, that may be the entire 14 cents. I'm talking about the employer's contribution, which
it'd be
is
half that, I would imagine, because it's 6 and 6, right?
Six, and then there's another 2. It's a total of 14 cents, 8 cents from the...
Okay.
But only 12 cents goes to the retroactive reserve, and 6 cents is in the obligation of the employer. The last figures we had, anyway, was about $1.6 million per penny, and I don't know if that's correct. Is there anyone here from the board that could correct that? But I thought it was around $10 million.
Someone here, can you...
Our figures, and Larry Young from Workers' Compensation, our figures is about 1/8 million per cent.
For a cent?
Yes.
I see. Okay. 1.8 million per cent.
Well, that's more than my $10 million figure, which I consider an additional burden imposed on employers for the workers' compensation system. In light of the high premiums that employers are paying for workers' compensation, perhaps as much as, I've heard the figure, $300 million this year. And, of course, out of that, there's an assessment of 5% of that amount, which I guess is figured in with the, out of the premium. Plus this, we would request that Oregon employers be relieved of contributing to the retroactive reserve, and we'd let the repealer ride.
And then you'll just have the employees contribute the 6 cents.
Well, we don't know whether the additional 6 cents is necessary at this point. We have no figures from the board. They are not here to testify that there's a necessity for this additional six
well,
cents.
I think,
and at the time that we agreed to it, we understood because of the dramatic increase in the benefits that it was necessary for this amount of money, and this was to be repealed this year.
Is there anyone here? What is your name with the WCB?
Larry Young.
Larry, would you have that information as to the need for this biennium? Okay, we'll put you on last year in as far as the need is. Okay, do you have anything to say, Roy?
No, I.
Well, let me ask you this. If the need is shown, say that there's a need to continue this, maybe even to a lesser amount, 3 cents, 4 cents, split the difference between labor, between the deduction from the employee and management. Would you be willing to cooperate as far as the need is concerned?
Senator, we'll always cooperate in this issue.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Shoulder to shoulder.
Okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Wires.
Thank you. You testified that I'm coming into this kind of late after the agreement was made and so forth, but my understanding has been that there's a continuing rise in workman's compensation costs, and in this... My understanding of a retroactive reserve is that it's a fund that's paid into to pay for increases that are granted to long-standing or older permanent and total claims.
That's correct.
It's kind of like a cost of living or an inflationary fund. Well, the part I can't put together from your testimony so far is what's happened. From what I've been understanding is these are supposed to be just escalating up off the chart.
Yeah, that's true.
Then why would there be a lessened demand against you as opposed to when this was instituted?
Well, because in 1973 there was a dramatic change in the amount of benefit levels from the prior sessions, and they had to bring all of those old benefit levels up to
where they should be.
Up to where the legislature and the wisdom decided they should be, and they needed quite a bit of money at that time. Initially, they thought they only needed 3 cents. From the employers. As a matter of fact, historically, the retroactive reserve had been funded entirely by employee contributions until the 73 session. Then they decided that they didn't have enough funds, so they came back in the special session and added another 3 cents on the employers. So they needed a total of 12 cents and 6 cents coming from the employers. But just because of that dramatic rise at that particular time. Now, I don't have any figures again. I'm helpless without the board telling us.
We'll have that information, I think, later.
But I don't think the demands are as great, Senator Wires, as they were at that time.
How far are they catching up in this? I think as far as their employers...
Mr. Gill said 75 levels, if I'm not
75
mistaken.
Level now,
yeah.
Which isn't bad.
Senator Wires, part of the reason why it's very possible it's less now is that you're having the attrition of time and the deaths of widows and permanent totals. You're losing some of the older widows, you're putting newer, younger widows on that get a much smaller additional amount because the basic statutory amount is higher. For example, there were several hundred widows who are getting only $30 a month.
at one time. Then there was a group of them getting only 40, and then there was a group of them getting only 60. And this brought them up to somewhere above 300.
It's up over 400 now, I believe.
Yes, it's 4.35 times $97.59, whatever that is. It's over $400.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering why it is that since this bill came out of the Committee on Trade and Economic Development, we don't have somebody from that committee here to tell us why it's needed.
Well, the reason that I'm a member that was a member of that committee, Cliff, and the reason was left open, we weren't sure what was needed. We didn't have the figures at that time, and that's why we have WCB here, who can tell us whether it's needed. Perhaps my thinking would be to split the, if it's 6 cents, so it would be 3 cents between management and the employer, and 3 cents from contribution from the working.
But the committee was convinced that there is
that there might be a need. Yes,
there might be.
Any further questions?
One short one. Thank you. What would you anticipate would be the effect on this retroactive reserve fund if the legislature this session decided to have some reduction in benefits after the for a permanent and totally disabled worker after they reach some advanced age, like 65 or something? Would that affect this fund much?
It wouldn't affect the retroactive reserve. Well, it could, yes. Couldn't it?
Because
it would be grandfathered in.
Yeah.
Those that are already receiving that would be grandfathered in, and would apply to those actors, so it wouldn't affect the fund.
Or minimally.
That would not be retroactive on persons receiving benefits currently, I don't believe.
Well, if someone gets disabled in 76, and they get established at a certain level for permanent total disability, and then they later reach a retirement age, and it's decided, some retirement age is decided on by the legislature this session, and it's decided that after that they'll only get a set amount, and after that there's a raise in the benefit for a permanent totally disabled person under that age, then that person over that age wouldn't get that increase.
Unless it's provided for in the legislation.
Yes,
correct.
Well,
there could be less of a demand, to answer your question, I suppose.
What?
There could be less of a demand, couldn't there?
Yeah. Wouldn't that,
I don't think
wouldn't that happen. Lessen the demand on the fund?
Yeah.
Isn't the man who's disabled today going to get cost of living increases later out of this fund?
That's the theory of the retroactive reserve, yes.
Well, then if we set a ceiling on how much he could get after...
The demand would be less, is what you're saying.
Let me ask you this. The overall rates are dependent. The overall rates are taking those into consideration since that bill went into effect in 1973. The rates now. There's no retroactive reserve fund to take care of those that were injured prior to the time this act went into effect, is my understanding.
There is a retroactive reserve for permanent totals and fatals, but not for temporary total disability. Temporary total disability is paid by the employer.
Right, but what about... Yeah.
This just covers permanent total disability death and death during permanent total disability.
Right, but that's those that this would wouldn't apply to those that suffered a permanent total after the act went into effect. Where would the retroactive reserve fund come into play then?
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was still
continuing. Sure. If at some future date there's an increase, for example, in the benefit.
Well,
levels,
the increase is tied to the cost of now tied to the cost of living. It's tied to the cost of living. Where would the increase come?
What if the percentage went up, though?
Unless we.
What if the percentage went up?
Unless we increased the percentage, which is not likely.
But it's for the owner. It's tied to the cost of living. Therefore, every year there's an increase in the cost of living, then the retroactive reserve increases. But the additional amount...
That retroactive reserve, I mean, when the increase of cost of living doesn't come out of the retroactive reserve, is reflected in the rates.
No, sir. That comes retroactive reserve.
The only increase, I mean, if it's automatically increased because it's a certain percentage of the average weekly wage, or it goes up as a result...
Fire injured employees you're concerned about now?
I'm talking about those after 1973, after the act went into effect.
Yes, for any employee who was injured after that bill went into effect and becomes either fatally injured or permanently and totally disabled, the retroactive reserve increases because of the cost of living increases are reflected into that.
Then you say that's coming out of that 6 cents?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Senator Trowe.
I'm looking at the fiscal analysis of the proposed legislation. And for 1975-77, they're estimating expenditures of $39.5 million. And estimated expenditures for 77-79, the next biennium, they're estimating $49 million. That's a little better than $10 million difference increase in expenditures. If the employers aren't going to contribute, where will the money come from to pay for the expenditures?
I'm not privy to that information. I didn't.
On the information generated.
That's the type of information I'd like to see.
You don't have that?
No.
Kind of information.
The Workman's Compensation Board, it's from the funding of the Workman's Compensation Board, it's the retroactive reserve.
Is that money they're actually collecting?
Are going to be expending for
RR? Perhaps we're confused about the information generated with us, but it looks to me like that from the fund, if I can read this thing correctly, they're going to be spending quite a lot of money out of it. Am I misreading it?
Are you aware of that?
They are budgeting. From my calculations, they're budgeting income of workmen's contributions, and that's the 8 cents a day, of $32,195,356. Of that, there are 75% of that, or 6 cents a day, would come from the employers if we were under the present law, which is about $24 million for a biennium. So they're using 12/14 of that, or 6/7. Of approximately $56 million. So that is about 40.
Yeah.
About $47 million that they're saying is going to be spent.
We're going to call Bill Hansen from Legislative Fiscal and have him up here in a little bit. And if you want to, I think it's better to argue with him.
Is that approximately square with that, sir?
No, they're talking about $49 million as estimated expenditures. They talk about revenue of $48 million something. They talk about investment income of $1,750,000. Yeah. They'll have a balance left over of $11 million, but it sure does seem as though if they're going to spend $10 million more the next biennium they spent last biennium, the money's got to come from someplace. And I suppose they're assuming contributions both from employers and employees.
That's correct. Senator Wade kept that with the same revenue that we have at the present time and the same expenditure.
Okay. But can we think of those expenditures being legitimate, so you need that revenue, or are you just expending what revenue is going to be there?
We're expending this.
Good question.
It is based upon the company's change. It's not 9 or 7177, but it remains unchanged. This is what we are revenue and expenditures.
But are those expenditures needed to service the people that are getting serviced? That's what I'm asking.
Based upon the percentage, we are now operating 80% of average weekly wage based on average weekly wage by the same way we're
computing
expenditures now.
Would that $11 million balance that you have, would that be reflected as in that $49 million? Would it bring the $49 million down to as far as expenditures are concerned?
No, actually, it'll go up probably another $5 million.
Generating these monies for something that
hasn't
been used?
I see.
Go ahead. Why don't we have?
We'll have you up here later, Mr. Young. Are there any more questions that we have to ask of Mr. Fredericks or Roy Green?
Well, let me ask them. Are you saying then that this fund is not needed because we don't need to put that kind of money out there to service the people
who are
concerned?
We're saying we don't know.
You don't know
about the figures. We don't know what they're spending. We understand they're collecting this money, if that's what those figures indicate, but we don't know if it's actually expended for this particular purpose. It was needed, we understand, in 73 or 74, when we're not sure it's needed now.
I'm surprised you don't know, because I think if you're experts on this, you would know.
We're at the mercy of the Workman's Comp Board for figures, and we don't have those figures.
The Workman's Comp Board hasn't given you the privilege of that information.
Is that right?
Have they?
Isn't all that information public?
Not what you've got there, apparently. They're holding their budget hearings currently, incidentally.
Hmm. Are there any further questions?
Strange.
If not, Chuck Gill from SAFE.
This is Senate Bill 200, Senator.
299. No, I'm sorry, 299. Len Hannon, the Oregon.
Yeah,
no, that's not Leroy Hannon.
Mr. Chairman,
My name is Leroy Hannon from Oregon Farm Bureau. It seems that the information that we have been given on why this was originally set up is different than what has been received in testimony this morning or this afternoon. We understood that it was on a one-term or a one-shot deal, and that it would not be, well, it would be reviewed to see if the need was still there in 1977, which is now. We too do not understand why this is, the purpose is needed to continue it. And this is why we're confused as to why we're being considered on this. We would
well,
like
it
to
is being reviewed now, and evidently legislative fiscal says it is needed, and you're going to hear testimony to that effect,
okay.
And you'll have...
We would like to hold our opinion or until after we hear what the need is.
Okay.
So, we're curious.
Any questions of Mr. Hannon? If not, thank you, Len. Larry Young. WCB. Do we have any 1 year from, is Mr. Hannon here, or who is it from Fisco? Mr. Hanson?
She's calling.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Larry Young. I'm the Assistant Administrator of the Administrative Service Division of the Board. And I've brought Michael Lamb, the Casual Actuary from the Insurance Division, to help me with a question I can't answer. I had not put down to testify, but just to provide information for the Board if you had questions. The information you have before you as far as Senator Troll asked about what our needs were. What we have provided to the legislative analyst is in response to his request of what information, what the expenditures would be, what the revenue would be, and the rationale behind the assessments and contributions that brought about the bills. The expenditures currently, and if they remain unchanged at the present assessment rate, which is currently 80% for PPD, 100% for fatals, of the 1975 average weekly wage, it's always based on the previous year. Theoretically, on 7/1/77, we would go to the 1976 average weekly wage. The computations we've developed indicate that expenditures for the fiscal year, or the biennium 75-77 would be $39,564,000, and estimated for the 75-77 biennium, if everything remained unchanged, would be $49,680,000. Then you add on another quarter because we're a quarter behind, it would be closer to $55,437,000.
Why the large increases? Michael, maybe you could.
Mr. Young has explained that, but the assumption here is that every July 1st, the board will increase the benefits up to 1 year prior to average weekly wage definition. So every year that happens, another year's worth of claims is added on, and the former years are increased, and this increase just adds to the top of the total benefit. And it sounds kind of amplified there. They increase the total benefit 8 or 10%, but it increases what the board pays out of this reserve several times more than that.
Yeah, the average weekly wage...
As the average weekly wage goes up...
Goes up, so with
the retroactive reserve would increase to those...
The expenditures from it, yes.
Where the first awards were not that... We're much below that, or we're below that. So I would see there would be...
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Senator Wires.
Could the casual actuary move the mic a little closer to himself? I can't hear him.
It's difficult to hear either one of you. Then let me ask you this, Mr. Lamb. Do you feel that the 6 cents assessed against both the employer and employees would be adequate in view of what you...
Well, the projections the board has provided you shows that without that 12 cents, they would not be able to continue the present benefits that they're paying out.
And that's your findings? to that the 12 cents is needed?
It's needed to maintain the present program.
Okay. Are there any further questions?
What about the present program? Is the present program a requirement, a statute, so that you must have the funding to keep the present program going?
I understand. It's up to the board to determine what... they have the option to decide what retroactive benefit level they will reimburse the...
So it's not statute, it's up to the board to decide. And the board apparently is deciding that they want to maintain the program as it is, and they then need the funding that they...
No, so we don't have that authority to say that we need the program or not. What we're saying is that if the program, if the legislator decides that this is what they wish, and if they wish it at this same level, both the contributions and the assessments, that this is what the revenue would be and what the expenditures would be.
I see. So you're saying it's up to the legislature in terms of what we do with this bill. We'll be deciding by how much we assess the employer and the employee as to what this retroactive program is going to look like. Is that what
yes,
you're saying?
Sir. We have what the board sets is the percentage rate of determining how it's to be paid. Like the 80% and 100% figure I gave you is determined by the board.
If we reduce the amount of money, they'd have to reduce those figures. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
I see.
As I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, you'd probably know, it seems to me the goal of the legislature was, when we passed this bill, was to bring it up to current levels, those that are under retroactive reserve, that we brought their benefits up to current levels, and this was our goal. We're up to the 75 level with that present assessment, and I suppose that the attempt what would be to bring it up to the 76 level?
Yes, sir.
In this biennium. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
And I believe that's in the statutes in which here's a statute on the purpose of research to provide increased benefits to claimants of beneficiary eligible to receive compensation under the benefit schedules of ORS 656204, 656206, and 656208, which are lower than currently being paid for like injuries. So I would presume this was a... it would appear to me would be mandated to fund that to carry out the intent of the legislature.
Yes, sir.
The board has discretion with insufficient funds to reduce the level of benefits paid.
Are there any further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Jan?
Thank you. How do you, Mr. Young, in the Workman's Comp Board, how do you handle availability of information to people like Mr. Fredericks with AOI?
All our records are public records available for inspection. We've been very happy to give him anything he requested if we had it available.
Well,
this was prepared, this report that you're referring to was prepared Thursday night and Friday morning to have it to Mr. Hansen by noon, and it's just that fresh.
Well,
but we do have actuarial figures on our retro we've had continuously, and it's always available.
Well, I'm not finished, but you go ahead. Go ahead. Come back.
Well, my question relates to that one, and this bill has come from the Trade and Economic Development Committee. Wasn't there not testimony about the needs and the amount of money and so forth at that point, and didn't you generate the information that early?
I believe we did, Senator.
Then why wouldn't it have been available to the AOI and anybody who wanted it?
I'm sure it's probably in the committee's records, sir, in the tapes. I really didn't attend the committee's meeting, sir. I don't...
Well, you know, it just seems to me like that people are saying that there's a mystery about, you know, where the information is. They don't know about this. It seems strange.
Any further questions? Jan, did you have another question?
Well, maybe one more. We may have pretty well covered it, but do you see anything that would create a downward demand for money in this area, the retroactive reserve? Was there a catching up process that's now taken place? Your figures here don't indicate that.
it's it will eventually level off. But with the with the way it is, go ahead.
I think we explained a while ago that whenever a benefit level is increased, but the board decides to increase the retroactive benefit level, there's another year's worth of claimants being added, as well as increasing the benefit for older claimants. And if at some time they decide to stop increasing this this benefit every so often, then there would be some attrition over the years. It would start decreasing.
What you're saying right now is that we're adding new people to the list of people who are permanently totally disabled or fatal, and we keep pouring more people in the top, and then when we make the container a little bigger, there are always more demand for the money.
Every time there's an increase in the benefit level that responds to cost of living or whatever, there are more people become eligible for these benefits.
All right, I understand but now, wasn't the container made quite a bit larger suddenly in 73?
I believe so.
Now, if we aren't making it a lot larger right along, is there some way that we would catch up to an extent, even though we are adding new people all the time?
Well, see, that we're some years after a calendar period or something, claims to become known and become determined to be permanently total disabled and so forth. So this attrition is not immediate. It takes a few years before it gets to a peak and then starts to decline. So if you start adding more years before those older years are up to their peak, see the kind of growth that's been shown to you there.
Any further questions, Dan? Testimony we had from Carl Frederick and Mr. Green was that there were those that were falling off, that were dying and whatnot. Therefore, the fund should be more self-sustaining, and that less need for this total assessment may be less. Do you have any comments on this previous testimony?
Well, it's true that for the older years, there is some attrition. Widows, there's mortality involved in remarriage and so forth.
But the new demand balances out, but the more than compensates for those that are out of the program or lost because of death.
That's how it has been happening lately.
Roy, do you buy that? Roy Green? Are you disagreeing with it? This man's an actuary.
We don't have the figures.
You are also an actuary.
We don't have the figures, but you must remember that those who are dying off are receiving substantially higher amounts of retroactive reserves than those who are being added to the roll.
That is right.
So the ones that are being added currently have a relatively small amount of additional benefits. There's a less demand for it. So as time goes on, you normally can expect a lower amount of retroactive reserve requirements. So the requirements within $400, the $30 a month that were being received by widows up to July 1st of 1942, of course, is $370. When one of those widows dies off, you drop in $70 a month. When you add one on, that's where a widow was, her husband was killed, or a widower, his wife was killed, in 75, you're adding only a few dollars to the requirement. And this is what?
About $30.
However, Senator, that what Mr. Lamb is saying is that with each year you step forward, you have considerably number.
It would be the numbers that would take care of that.
The numbers might take care of that. At first, the dropping off for two or three, it would be higher. I don't know what it would be actuarially, though. We don't have any figures on that.
I think that I would like to see a meeting between the two actuaries. At some time, and see if we can't see if it's justified. We certainly don't want to assess the employer, neither do we want to assess the employee the 6 cents unless it's necessary. But we certainly want to keep that retroactive reserve fund adequately funded. I'm sure that the members of the committee feel as do I. But we want to be sure. And I would certainly suggest that probably that Roy and maybe you, Mr. Young, and Carl and and Roy Green if we could get together, and I don't think we're going to accomplish much more here in that we've heard two sides, and I would certainly want to know before we take any action on this bill and make sure that it's needed. And I hope you understand. Do you have anything?
Mr. Chairman, if I ask one more question?
Certainly.
Thank you. I wanted to ask a question, Mr. Frederick. You mentioned your testimony that there was an agreement made. That's just been slowly sinking in. I wonder who that agreement was with, and if that's in the legislation now.
Yeah. Well, obviously you can't find future legislative sessions, but it was kind of a tacit understanding between us and the AFL-CIO, I would say, and the chairman of the Senate Labor Committee at that time.
Nice. Thank you.
Who is that?
No, I work shoulder to shoulder with him.
Why don't I'd like to see Cliff Trull, Senator Trull, and myself. Maybe we can meet. Find a time when we can meet, and see if we can't. Maybe right you.
Sure.
We're at your disposal, sir.
Fine. Are there any further questions? If not, this would conclude the hearing on Senate Bill.
That's the common subcommittee you want.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We'll get a room and a time.
You can work with the staff here with Rich and find a time, and Carl, if you could do that, then when we can all get together, and we'll find a room.
Be good idea to have the AFL-CIO involved in it.
Yeah, I think it would probably. Nellie, would you like to?
I would defer to President Kennedy.
Okay. Well, either you or Bob, fine, if you would advise Bob, then we can get in touch with him, too. Great. Okay, Senate Bill 300. Our first witness, Carl Fredericks, Associated Oregon Industries. Carl, did you want
to... proponents?
Yes, there's no proponents. You're how fortunate you can be.
The last one started out this week.
Carl Frederick, member of the staff at Associated Oregon Industry, and biennial visit in opposition to the concept expressed in Senate Bill 300. We'd like to speak in opposition to this approach. We're opposed to the bill because we feel it's an unwarranted subsidy to a specific classification under Oregon's workman's compensation law. The rate-making formula, although complex in its computation, is basically simple in theory. Rates for workman's compensation in Oregon are essentially determined by the cost of accidents and payrolls for each classification reported. And we feel that this proposal, Senate Bill 300, and frankly the laws adopted in the previous two sessions of the Oregon legislature, the $8.50 statutory rate in 1973 and the $12.50 statutory rate in 1975, are radical departures from an actuarially sound rate-making process. Now, we recognize that the agricultural community has a problem with escalating workman's compensation costs, and we share the same concern, believe me. However, we feel that the creation of an artificial rate is a head-in-the-sand approach and will only serve to delay a resolution or solution of the problems. Actually, how can we expect the farmer to work on safety and rehabilitation and accident prevention if the legislature says to him, regardless of what you do, the workman's compensation rate will not exceed $8.50 or $12.50 or what have you, whatever you decide this time. But most importantly, I think you're saying in this bill, the rest of industry will pick up any deficiencies in the artificial rate we create. And as a representative of many of those other industrial classifications, we don't consider this to be very fair. And we might point out that there are, I think, over 600 classifications, and I counted at least 100 plus of those classifications that are in excess of the current $12.50 statutory rate. So we would respectfully urge this committee to table Senate Bill 300. Right?
Right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you
agree with him, or?
I agree. We've had this for a period of 4 years now. I think the farming community should begin to accept its full responsibility in the cost of workers' compensation. The method of calculation of rates, which is pretty standard in the nation, has what is known as a calendar year in a policy year calculation, each of which has 50%, has equal standing, let's say, in the calculation of the rates. Under the calendar year calculation, it's more or less a type of accounting where you just, you compare what's taken in and what's paid out. What is not received from the farming community actually, in effect, has been paid in by other industrial classification zones. It is a subsidy of farming by the all the employers in Oregon who are not in the farming area.
Any questions of Roy or Carl Frederick?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Wires.
Thank you. Do we know how much the actual rate would be for farming if this were controlled based on experience rating?
I think that Mike Lamb can tell us, yes.
So I understand it's about $21.
No, I heard it was less than 19.
Less than
18.44.
Thank you.
In other words, it's about 40, they're paying be about 48% more from 12.5 to 18.44.
You say the rate would be 18.44 if they
That's
were?
What they
yes, sir.
Okay.
Is the social policy, could you tell me what the social policy has been, argument has been in favor of this? You seem knowledgeable about when it was put into effect and that sort of thing.
Well, I can tell you what happened historically. There was a proposal for a $16.50 rate, wasn't it, just prior to the 1973 session. And there was a great deal of interest by the agricultural community over that high rate. And, of course, some of us were concerned about the logging rate, which was also high at that time. So they came into the 1973 session, and ultimately an arrangement was made for a special classification.
There was more to it than that. But
well, I'm not going to. You can tell about that at your leisure. And an $8.50 rate was arrived at. And they attempted a $10.50 rate, I believe it was, in the 1975 session, and that was ultimately set at $12.50, which was higher. And something happened that we warned would happen in 1973 when we opposed it. We said that other classifications would probably come in and ask for the same treatment, specialized treatment. And I think Senator Trove recall the loggers came in with asked for a $11 rate, it was half of their $22 rate, but that was defeated. So
thank you.
Okay, any further questions? If not, thank you. Roy, thank you, Carl. Chuck Gill.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Chuck Gill, and I'm manager of the State Accident Insurance Fund, and
excuse me.
Yeah.
I think I'd like you to help on this committee, too. I saw your face turning a little red back there, and I thought maybe you'd have something to offer.
On the retroactive reserve committee?
Yeah.
Thank you
very
much.
I always feel something's wrong when I watch your face. Go ahead.
I got to learn to control my emotions, I guess. We're peculiarly interested in this bill and feel the pressure of this bill simply because we end up riding the great majority of farmers in the state. Before the statutory rate went in, we wrote approximately 46% of the farm business in the state. We're now right better than 90% of the farm business in the state for obvious reasons.
Why the companies don't take their share of that? Why couldn't you put those in the assigned risk? I mean, are they?
Well, if I was a private company, I certainly wouldn't want to write somebody at a rate that was less than adequate to meet the costs, and I certainly don't blame them. To answer your question, Senator, the alternative is to probably put that classification in an assigned risk pool and assign it out to all the carriers. I'm reluctant to do that. While we have that prerogative in the law to do that, SAFE has never utilized the assigned risk pool, feeling that there's great advantage to providing a sure market for employers and to try to work with them to develop some kind of programs of safety to reduce the cost.
Yes, Chuck, do you feel as long as the insurance companies are skimming off the cream that SAFE should utilize the assigned risk pool? I mean, this was a bad risk, too.
Well,
do you feel that, with, that you should utilize, if this is continues, do you feel like feel that SAFE should utilize and put into effect, which you can do, the assigned risk score?
Senator, I do feel that if a legislative rate continues that is in ratio to what it is now, that I would think it would be prudent to invoke the assigned risk pool and to distribute those costs among all the carriers and thus all the employers, because we find now that the employers insured with SAFE are subsidizing the majority of the great vast majority of the farm community in this workman's compensation field. Now, the result of that last year, for instance, was a reduction of about $2.5 million of premium that we otherwise would have collected it had the rate been the assigned 1844. That's a lot of dollars, it seems to me, to have the employers that are insured with SAFE to assume by themselves.
In other words, you could have paid greater dividends if you didn't have to carry the...
There would have been a greater return of those dollars spread over the broad section of the business community and as opposed to just a small section
so
of the farm community.
So the private insurance companies are allowed to return a greater dividend because they're skimming off the cream and they don't have to write these substandard risks as well as the rates where it's below. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
You're taking a little different tack than I was going to take, but that's probably correct, Senator.
I think you better hit them head on.
What I'm really suggesting is that while initially maybe there was some reason to develop a legislative rate, there was a concern at the time that that happened that there wasn't really enough experience because farmers were not under the Act prior to 1967. There wasn't really enough experience to make that rate valid that they came up with 1650. At least there was some question. And there was also... unfortunately, some deliberation by people representing the council or the insurance industry that maybe they could adjust the rate downward. When they said that, I think everybody says, well, if you can do that, you must not have very good actuarial information. We'll set the rate ourselves. In a sense, that's just exactly what they did. But that was, you know, 5 years ago or more. And now there's adequate experience to indicate what that rate should be. Should be pointed out also, a couple of years ago, they took that triple-aught six classification, which is general farming and which is the statutory rate, and broke it out into five different classifications and have been reporting on those classifications for the last 2 years in order to better define the different types of farm activity. And that rate will be probably a year from now enough experience in it to indicate what those individual rates should be. And probably what's going to happen is that triple-aught six classification is going to break into some rates that are going to be considerably lower and some rates that will probably be considerably higher, but at least it'll point to where the problems are. I would urge you, however, now to let this die, a natural death, to go back to the classification that's promulgated by the National Council and approved by our own insurance commissioner with his own actuary, and to let the farm community pay their fair share as just everybody else. In a year from now, we'll have a split off of that classification where some will go into their proper rates. But it is a proper rate as they're brought together right now. Also, to be honest with you, that it would probably indicate from the experience that's been going on and probably from the action of this this body that the benefits will probably be raised. It's an assumption that is likely, and that 1844 rate will likely go up. I can't indicate what that's going to be, but I'd presume that it would go up. So we're not talking about having a rate go off July 1st and becoming 1844 from 1250. It'll probably be higher than that. But I would encourage you to, I guess, let the farm community become realists like all the other employers and I think fight the system in a more realistic way. And that's through strong safety effort and improvements in the law itself. One other thing I'd like to share with you is that we do write most of the farm business, and most of the farm business is written in several different groups. We write the Wheat League, the Farm Bureau, and the Cattlemen's Association. Out of those groups, there's been some very good things happen. There's been more intense interest in safety than there ever was before. Formation of people within their groups to work directly with their people in the field. Safety has been a very integral part of their program in the last couple of years where it wasn't before. I would hate to lose all that by invoking an assigned risk pool. You'd have to disband the groups in order to do that, and I think you'd lose an awful lot.
You shouldn't make that statement here how good they are if we have any insurance companies trying to rate them if they are good risk, in effect.
I think you can put forth a very good effort, and they certainly have in a number of areas, but it's very hard to meet the rising cost in a number of areas that are uncontrollable. And to the extent that their loss ratios have declined, they have. Their frequency has also declined. The problem with that the cases that we do have, the severity of those cases have made up the difference. The cost of the claim, in other words, is much greater than it was before. But they have done a good job, and I want to indicate that. And I have every reason to believe that as time goes on, they will force that rate down individually. But you certainly take the incentive away to continue to do that when you do have a legislative rate. That's the bulk of my comments.
Senator Trope.
Mr. Gill, it seems to me what you're saying is that they've really done quite well in the last few years in improving safety records, and they've had a statutory rate during that period. Now you're saying take the statutory rate away and they'll do better. I don't know. Seems like that if they're doing all right, why not allow them the statutory rate?
When I say they're doing well, Senator, I certainly don't mean to imply that the premiums they're paying are covering the cost of their claims. Mm-hmm. They are not. Mm-hmm. They're doing better compared to what they were before when they didn't have any program at all. They're doing well because I think for a part anyway that we're in there with them trying to encourage them as a group to continue to do better. And I feel that we can't continue to be in there and take that great loss that we are taking.
If the rates went up to, let's say, the $20 you're expecting they might go up to, will that get back the costs?
Yes, we presume that the rate is actuarially promulgated and is going to reflect the cost of that classification.
I see. So that's the purpose. Anything less than what you determine the rate to be would not reflect the cost, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Chuck. If we were to continue the statutory rate, would you feel that there should be something in the bill to require, say, 60% based on you have 60% of the business here in the state of Oregon, and the private carriers have 40%, that this risk should be distributed equally among both risks, or do you think you should have it all or 90% of it as you do it at the present time?
Well,
if there must be some way we could do it.
Well, we have the prerogative right now to invoke the assigned risk pool to put any risk that we want to, and I suppose that's a judgment decision that
would it
that
be
we
as far as your agency is concerned if we do it via the statute?
I suppose that it's always easier when you don't have to make a decision and somebody else makes it for you. I guess I'm putting the farm community on warning that's likely to happen.
When you cancel out a risk, every legislator in the state of Oregon hears about it. When a company cancels out a risk, they don't. I mean, if any constituent has problems with safe, we hear about it. But you don't as far as the insurance companies. You never hear them. Maybe they never do anything wrong.
Well, we haven't canceled out anybody yet, and it's kind of going to be a new experience, but I presume it's one that we should stand up and face, and I wouldn't mind doing that.
Okay.
If it was for a good reason. There was a reasonable reason to do that, and I feel there is.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. As someone who eats food, don't you feel that it's rather unfortunate to say that the farmer should learn to live in the real world of actuality when people who consume food are still living in a world of expecting the farmer to subsidize them constantly with low return on the farm commodities? Or were you only referring to the world of reality of within the narrower confines of workman's compensation?
I suppose in my narrow experience, I was talking about the field of workman's compensation. I would point out, too, that there are a number of people that we insure that are in the other farmers in different classification, in the food processing business, a number of others that are subsidizing this farm group, and they're struggling also. And they're having a very difficult time meeting their premiums. And I just think that it's unfair under the present set of circumstances for those employers who are having a difficult time in any case to carry the load of somebody else.
It's your position that the middlemen are having as difficult a time surviving as the actual producers of food and fiber?
In my experience, I find businessmen at all levels suffering right now with the costs of running a business, and certainly not the least of these are workman's compensation costs.
I had one more question about, you mentioned the three groups, the Wheat League, the Farm Bureau, and the Cattlemen's League that you've been working with. Other than working within the statutory rate, having the statutory rate, is there anything else special about the way you work with these groups that affects their rate? You mentioned that you're working on safety and this kind of thing, but I mean, if there were farmers who were not members of the Farm Bureau and bought insurance from you direct, which I don't know if there are or not. But
yes, a great number of them.
There are. Yeah. Now, would they get the same rate as a farmer who bought insurance from you through the Farm Bureau?
No, not through the Farm Bureau. We have a special group for the Farm Bureau. They would get the same rate as they would with the other two groups, the Wheat League and the Cattlemen.
Could you explain the special rate for the Farm Bureau?
Yes,
please?
I will. Under the law, it's authorized that there can be a group form called, referred to as a pure group, where the group stands alone as far as experience rating. They're considered one employer instead of a number of them. Premium discount. We entered into such agreement a number of years ago when it was very difficult to get anybody to write the farm community. They were just coming under the law. Before that, the Farm Bureau Federation, which has an insurance company, performed a number of tasks that were difficult for us to perform, and we found it could inure to the benefit of all parties, primarily as one of auditing, to make sure that the proper classification and reporting was done. Farmers are widespread and difficult to contact, and they had already maintained those contacts. So we entered into the group agreement. They guarantee the premiums. They guarantee the premiums to a state accident insurance fund. They collect the premiums. They do the auditing, and they do the selling, in a sense, which isn't a difficult task in these days. And for that, we handle all the claims, and they get a 10% discount on their rate. And they get an experience rating, which is that 10% discount, which is maintained except for the triple odd six classification.
Well, then they'd get their raise $12.50 minus
so 11 something.
It'd be $12.50 minus $1.25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's correct. Very close.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any further questions? If not, thank you, Chuck.
Thank
you. Our last witness, I think, is going to surprise everybody. Leroy Hannon, representing the Oregon State Farm Bureau, opposed to Senate Bill 300.
Mr. Chairman, Leroy Hannon, Oregon Farm Bureau. I got in the wrong box.
You are in the wrong box, right?
I put my X in the wrong box.
We're
in favor of the statutory exemption, of course, but we're opposed to any increase, of course.
And opposed to any increase?
Right, in the statutory rate of $12.50. We've heard from our good friends at AOI and SAFE that we are experiencing an unwarranted subsidy. Well, we don't feel it's unwarranted in any way because there is a social policy that is integrated into the statutory exemption by which we are unique in the way we market our products. We do not have that ability to pass on automatically the cost of our doing business to our consumer. We go on a availability or productivity basis. And so we're not like the producer or the person that actually markets the ultimate product, where he can say, well, my costs have gone up 6%, therefore I'll add 6% to my price. The farmer is not in that position. It was also indicated that we, as farmers, because we have the statutory exemption, are not encouraged to improve our safety record. And as has been stated here, farmers are becoming good risks, even with the statutory exemption. Mr. Johnson of the Workman's Comp Board has indicated that our accident rate has decreased 50% in the last 2 years. Now this is, I think, quite significant. Now those figures were indicated to us when we were trying to get rid of some law rules on guarding and other of machinery. And we were told that we were doing a good job, but we were not doing the level that was necessary. And now we're indicated that we're a good risk, but we don't need the statutory exemption. And we would like to indicate to you today that we do need the statutory exemption. We would like to see it retained at the 1250 rate, and that we would like to see this bill passed at that rate.
Okay, any questions? You've heard the testimony here. I mean, that you are 90% of your insured through SAFE, 10% through private carriers. Would you be willing to suggest an amendment to this bill where, say, 40% would go with private carriers, or 60% with SAFE, or you would prefer being in SAFE?
Right, because the way we're set up now, we do have the ability to encourage safety. We have our dividends that go back to our farmers.
Well, let me ask this. Don't the private insurers have a safety program?
Well, Farm Bureau, and I'm speaking for Farm Bureau, we have our own program. In fact, a member of SAFE, Mr. Gill's office...
Don't you have your own program under a private insurance carrier?
Yes, but we're very proud of our program, which we have taken on our own initiative, and we've cleared up through SAFE, and they visited with our people last week. They were very delighted with the way we have our program set up. And we're doing the job, we're reducing the accident rate, and ultimately I think that we should be encouraged to do this through a statutory exemption.
Well, for the benefit of the committee, I'll tell you, if we go for a statutory rate for the farmer this year, I'm certainly not in favor of a certain, all those that are insured with SAFE, picking up the tab. I mean, they could have larger dividends, obviously, if other classes, if the insurance industry itself would pick up their share. Otherwise, as far as I'm concerned, I will not support a statutory rate for farmers if SAFE is to take the burden of it, and I just assume the third notice in that right now.
Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to indicate that if we lose this 1250 rate, that rate would go near $25. And that is 100% increase.
We heard 1844, I think.
Well, this is not what we've heard from SAFE people.
Mr. Chairman, I think he said a beyond 20.
Yeah, he said it would be above 20, but we were told that it would be near $25. And this is just unreal. We couldn't live with this.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Wires.
Thank you. Illegal aliens, is there workman's comp withheld for them?
Sure.
I'm sure there is, because we cover everyone that works on a farm.
How would that be reported on someone who didn't have an alien card? It's my understanding that legal aliens have a card.
That's correct.
And illegal aliens don't have a card.
I think you'd have to ask someone from the agency other than, I don't... Roy's familiar with that.
I know.
Let me just ask my question to make my point then, and let it go with that. My point would be, I put it in the form of a question, if it's a fact that there isn't workman's comp withheld for illegal aliens, and should the federal government mandate something that forces this that people that be employed be registered in some way, such as the Rodino bill, or if the program, which I understand many farmers are now looking into, which would have a certificate program where the people who came in would be accounted for and there wouldn't be any more illegal workers, then it would seem to me that there would be many more workers who would not then be registered into the workman's comp program. So many of the injuries that may have been taking occurring to people who were not registered and not workman's comp wasn't being withheld, would seem to me that you that the work that the agriculture labor area would have a tremendous increase in reported accidents. Don't you think?
Don't you think?
Well, I guess it's which way you look at illegal. When these people come to the farmer, they have the proper documentation that indicates they are a legal citizen. But when further checks reveal that these are fake identities, then they become illegal. But you see, they are, on paper, legal people. They have Social Security cards, they have the proper documentation that says that they've come through the naturalization and procedure and things like this.
Can they bring that back with them after they've been arrested and deported and come back 3 days later?
That's correct, sir.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not, thank you.
Are we on a bill or just...
300, Leroy.
Sorry.
We're not going to take any action on either bill today or... Glad you're here, Wally. We're about ready to adjourn.
Well, better late than never, I guess. Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone, any further witness that would care to testify in either bill, 299 or 300, that we missed? Yes. What bill, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ralph Colvin, legislative representative from the Oregon State Grange, and this is on Bill 300. This will be very short. It was just handed to me, and my boss went home, so I got stuck with it. We are not opposed to this bill as such, but we do feel that, especially where the farmer is concerned, the rate should be left about where it is. The farmer's caught in a peculiar situation whereby he cannot pass on the cost of doing business, as can most industries. Generally speaking, the farmer is under contract to the processor and is in a rather rigid structure price-wise. For this reason, we feel that agriculture has all the burden it can handle at the present. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Was that short enough?
That was real good.
Okay.
Okay, who's the farmers on this committee? The only one farmer I know is Mary Roberts. She's gone now.
She's gone.
I
saw her. Did she be dead to be the farmer?
We want a little time on this here, I would imagine, and consider this, and I think that probably we should have one more meeting on this farm Senate Bill 300. So if there's nothing further to come before the committee, we are adjourned.